Next case up is Bergmeier v. Bergmeier. Is it Mr. Smeal?
Yes, sir.
Good morning to you.
Please report here and speak on behalf of the appellant, plaintiff David Bergmeier. This case comes up on appeal from a trial-induced dissolution of marriage. It's a 30-year marriage. And the central issue, really, in this case is about the characterization of some what's called termination payments under a captive insurance agent contract. And the question is whether or not those are marital property subject to condition. And essentially what that means is that, just for clarification, a captive agent is, in contrast to an independent agent. So a captive agent is one that sells a single product, State Farm, not a single product, but for a single insurer, in this case State Farm, but doesn't own anything that he creates. So the business relationship that he creates continues to belong to State Farm. The policies that he writes and the renewals on those when he terminates continue to belong to State Farm. He doesn't get any of it. So in lieu of that, what we have in the State Farm contract are what's called termination payments. And it falls into two categories. There's termination payments and extended termination payments. And those termination payments are payments that Mr. Bergmeier will receive once he terminates his relationship with State Farm, or State Farm terminates their relationship with him. And the termination payments, the first set, he has to have only worked there for 2 years. And if he's worked there for 2 years, when he separates, he gets termination payments by a formula that's set out in the contract over a period of 5 years immediately following his termination.
And then it ends?
And then potentially it ends. If he's...
Those type of payments do end at 60 months.
Those absolutely will end. There may be some additional payments.
Correct. All right. And so, how contingent are the initial batch of the termination, the earlier one, not the extended?
Are they speculative? The value of them is certainly speculative, and whether or not you will get them is also speculative. Now, the threshold is somewhat low. As I said, he has to have worked there for 2 years, and then he also has to do some additional things, though. He can't sell insurance, so in other words, he can't compete with State Farm. He has to turn over everything that he's created to State Farm, and then he'll get a percentage of whatever he did in the immediately preceding 12 months. And the math is complicated, but that's essentially how it works. Now, if he qualifies for the early term, what I call early termination, they're really just called termination payments. Yep. If he qualifies for those termination payments and at the time he separates, he's been there for 20 years or more and is at least 62 years old, he'll get extended termination payments, and those will be indefinite. And how much of the extended termination payments he gets will be a product of whether he's 62, 63, 64, or beyond that, and is also a product of how much he sold in the 12 months prior to his separation, his termination. Now, in order for these to be, the court found this to be a marital asset. In order for it to be a marital asset, Davidson says it's a marital asset if it's property that's accumulated during the course of the marriage by the joint efforts of the parties. That's not the case here. This doesn't fit the bill. The reason for that is, again, it's not a, first of all, he didn't separate. He didn't terminate prior to dissolution. So he hasn't acquired anything. Now, the appellee kind of tries to sidestep this, and what they look at is they say, well, it's akin to a pension. And admittedly, if it were a pension, or even if it's sufficiently akin to a pension, it may qualify as a marital asset.
It's an employment benefit of some sort.
It is certainly an asset, absolutely. Now, but that alone doesn't make it marital. Not every asset's marital. We know that. So the question is it a marital asset under the Davidson standard?
What's another example of an employment-related benefit that wouldn't be a marital asset?
Severance package. So a severance package that replaces something, and that's the distinction here. It replaces something. So if the employment asset is something that compensates you for work you did during the marriage, deferred comp, even vacation pay, sick pay, the courts address all of those.
So this is the argument is made. Is this correct? This is in lieu of potential renewal commissions, which you won't get now.
That's not just an argument. That's an absolute fact, and I don't think that's going to be disputed by anybody.
Okay. So that's the nature of this benefit.
The nature of the benefit is it replaces renewals that a non-captive agent would be entitled to.
A non-captive would get those renewals notwithstanding the termination, not used as a word of art.
Absolutely. A non-captive agent separates, retires.
Right.
All of his renewals, as they continue to come in until they lapse, he continues to get paid on. Because he owns them. He created them and he owns them. He created them.
Okay, but upon what basis are the termination benefits computed?
They're computed solely on the 12-month period immediately preceding termination. So in this case, take the extended termination payments. That 12-month period has not occurred and still won't occur. That 12-month period, if he terminated at the earliest possible time, will occur more than 5 years after this decree was entered. Earliest time.
How old was he at the time of trial, please?
57, I believe, and he has to be a minimum of 62, and at 62 he gets a reduced portion of his extended termination payments. He pulls the trigger right at 62. So the extended termination payments can't be quantified.
So the number used by the district court was it did in fact quantify it, didn't he?
The district court did quantify the earlier the termination payments, not the extended. And that was based on purely a hypothetical. A letter comes from State Farm every year and says, if you retire now, here's what your benefit would be over that five-year period. But we all know that didn't happen. And the other thing that's important is he awarded a cash number out of that, and we have no idea what that's going to be. It could turn out to be 100%, theoretically, because the facts show that in 2009, 10, 11, and 12, the 4 years that led up to this, his revenue was going down. So if that pattern continued, and I don't know that it did, I don't know that it didn't either, but if that continued, ultimately, the 400 and some thousand that was awarded to Nancy could represent 100% of that asset. So in any event, to give it a specific quantity, I believe, was an error. But even so, this is not akin to a pension. The difference is, and it comes down to the same question, how's it quantified? In a pension, somebody's making contributions. It's not always an employee. There's an example of military pension. A military employee is not paying anything into that. But something is being put in, and it is being earmarked. And so even if the employee is not contributing, contributions are being made, and that can be pointed at and quantified at the time of separation.
Counsel, in both of these, the termination and the extended benefits, to qualify for either one of them, there has to be continued employment, correct?
Yes, that's true, but admittedly, and he had qualified for the first set.
Part of that time of continued employment, under either circumstance, would have been during the time of the marriage.
Certainly.
So the services that were provided by your client during the term of the marriage would, at least in part, enable those benefits to be paid, even though they are incalculable at this point in time. Correct?
That would be true, but I don't think that's determinative. Because again, the argument is that it's akin to a pension. And a pension is based on what's done, the sacrifices, and this is the case that the plaintiff cites as well. A pension is to reward an employee for time and personal sacrifice. Okay? And the wife, during the course of the marriage, during those years that you're asking about, contributed time and personal sacrifice, even if she didn't work for the company. We all accept that premise. But that's not the case here. Because what he's being compensated for is not his time of personal sacrifice. He's being compensated because everything that he created is being taken away by State Farm at the end. So it really is akin to a severance package because he's losing everything.
Is there anything with regard to the termination payments or the extended benefits that relate to the time or the amount of time that the employee spent with the company?
No, and that's an interesting question because that's come up in situations where it's been looked at as to whether or not it's deferred comp. And that's a different thing, but the analysis is the same. And I didn't talk about deferred comp in my brief, but really the tax courts have looked at that, interestingly enough, and looked at this very contract, and the tax courts have. And what the tax courts have determined, and that's gone up to the circuits, to various circuits, and this is only true of the State Farm contract. What they have to do is, for tax purposes, is determine if the benefit, those termination payments, relates to something that occurred during the course of the employment. There's a nexus that is derived from that. And what the tax courts determined, and ultimately what the circuits determined, was that there is no nexus. No nexus between what occurred during the course of the employment, which in that case, client here, would mean there's no nexus connecting it to what went on during the course of the marriage. Because all of the employment was during the course of the marriage. Now, that only holds true with this State Farm contract, because when that happened, everybody with an insurance contract went running into the circuit courts, and they distinguished all of them, but this one remained in the circuit courts. I can, as I said, it's not in the brief, I can give you a citation on that, which is 108 Tax Court 130, and then the circuit court, it was Milligan, the commissioner, was 38 F to 3rd, 1098.
38 but what?
1098.
38
F to 3rd, 1098, 1994. And the subsequent history in all those cases is going to show that argument was rejected in other contracts, but they accepted the premise with State Farm and distinguished all the other contracts because it had one additional condition, like you must have 400 accounts or something like that.
38 Fed 3rd, 1994?
1098, the year was 1994.
38
F 3rd,
1098.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Mr. Belmont, good morning to you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honor. My name, may it please the court, my name is Ben Belmont, and I represent the appellee Nancy Bergmeier in this proceeding. I want to emphasize that this is a 33-year marriage. They raised two children. A good part of the marriage, Ms. Bergmeier was a stay-at-home mom to care for the children, while Mr. Bergmeier built up this business.
Would there be anything in the record that would show that this extended benefits or termination payments would be based upon the length or effort of employment that the husband made during the marriage?
Yes. Well, it's based on the length of employment. In order to get the extended termination payments, you have to be 60, and that's all set forth, I think, on exhibit number 59. You have to have 20 years of service. You have to have 10 years of continuous service. It's a payment for life.
Did this husband have all of that qualifications at the time of the marriage?
Yes, sir. At the time of the marriage, no.
But I mean during the marriage?
Yes.
At the time of the divorce, he had 20 years in, is that correct?
That's correct. He started in 1986 is when he decided to start this.
Can you make a reasonable calculation as to the value of that severance package or whatever?
Well, I don't think it's a severance package, but extended termination.
Extended benefit package.
Exhibit number 126 is we had an accountant take a look at this, and he valued the extended termination payments at $1.5 million. And that's with Mr. Bergmeier getting those payments after he's received his 5 years of termination payments.
At what age?
At age 65.
So these are vested payments.
Is vested the right language here?
Those payments, he's going to get them again if he doesn't, and it's not non-compete.
Well, are there any events that would occur that would prevent him from receiving those packages other than dying?
If he doesn't get back the materials, and if he solicits or advises, and I think the terminology, if he induces, advises, or solicits any State Farm policyholders in his account at the time of the termination.
That's a breach of contract issue there.
Is that for a period of 1 year?
For a period of 1 year. So that is very, very low threshold for him to get $2.3 million. And what Mr. Bergmeier is up here arguing is that, geez, all that $2.3 million is mine, you know. Nancy Bergmeier, forget about the fact we've been married 30-something years. Forget about the fact that we raised two our children. At the end of the day, I get it all. And the contract with State Farm, that's a marital asset. That was a contract that was entered into during the course of the marriage. And I understand that he can't take those policies with him if he were to leave. He doesn't own those policies by contract. But he is entitled in that contract to those termination payments, which are very, very...
Would you characterize the initial termination payments as perhaps less speculative than the extended payments because there are more facts that must occur with respect to the extended payments? Could these be differentiated and treated differently for some assignation of marital or not at marital?
Sure, but the...
Has anybody done it?
I don't... No, as far as the value, I can tell you the value of those payments. We had those determined, which was about $806,000.
That's what the court accepted as to the what I'll call the initial termination payments,
that's
right?
Correct. That's what State Farm had calculated out based on information that Mr. Bergmeier had requested that's set forth in exhibit number
right. But 61. The court didn't put a number on the extended ones should they come in.
That's correct.
Are they, and why is the treatment different? Why is there an amount assigned to the first kind but not the extended kind?
I don't know why the court did that. We're entitled to a percentage of those payments, which would be 50% of those payments.
Well, that's what it held because why? It didn't have a number? It didn't have a dollar figure.
Correct. At
but
that
it
time.
Was willing to accept, I want to say, loosely saying, create a dollar number for the first kind of payments.
Correct, because we knew
you
that...
You put some evidence, said this is just probably going to happen. Let's put a number on it and split it.
Yeah, as I do in a lot of cases, the date of the separation of the parties as the valuation dates of the assets. We know, and there was some agreement on the record, we were going to value it in December of 2013. We know as of December 31st of 2013, if he were to take his termination benefits.
If it's an asset. If it's a marital asset, you would proceed as you suggest.
Correct.
Okay.
Well, those figures were offered and received in evidence. And that's in exhibit number 61, which we know, and exhibit number 126. We calculated that out, and that's where we come up with the $802,080. Where he would be receiving $13,368 a month for 60 months.
Well, that's the amount if this is a marital asset.
Correct.
Okay.
What's the significance of the tax case relied upon by the husband?
The tax case?
Yeah, just cited to us recently. What does that have to do with determination?
I don't know. I mean, I haven't had a chance to look at that.
You haven't looked at it either?
No. But
this contract's been litigated rather widely, at least in state courts.
Yeah.
Okay, and what's the gist of that jurisprudence?
Well, it's considered back in Tennessee and in Wisconsin in our favor. They've taken a look at that, and they said all this is a retirement account, basically, or deferred earnings account. Nebraska has always adopted a broad definition of deferred payments in these types of accounts. There was a case, Simon v. Simon. Simon v. Simon, where there was an early leave termination payment that OPS had. And as a result of that, the courts stated, and Simon v. Simon is 17 Neb App 834, 2009, where they state that the statute under 42.366, which includes any pension plan, retirement plan, annuities, and, Your Honor, this could be considered an annuity, basically, the first set of termination payments. And other deferred comp benefits owned by either party, whether vested or not vested, are considered marital assets. In Simon v. Simon, we had this early leaving incentive program that OPS offered, as a marital asset. The court's deemed as a marital asset. And the court said clearly, the statute clearly sweeps quite broadly in requiring retirement or deferred comp plans to be included in the division of the property.
But your opposing counsel says that that's not how to characterize this. This is in lieu of the commissions you would have had if you were a different kind of agent.
Well, let's think about that, because these are from policies that were acquired and accumulated during the course of the marriage. So let's say that there was no termination payments, but we have policies that are going to provide residuals for years to come. Why isn't that...
Not to a captive.
Not to a captive, but let's say that he's a non-captive, and he's got those policies.
That's a different contract.
Correct. I agree with you. But let's assume in this captive situation, what they're paying, what the consideration is, they're going to get these policies back. That's what they want. And that's part of their termination payments. Otherwise, Jay Bergmeier can take those. He can't take them with him, but he can basically say, come with me.
Were always owned by...
They're always owned by State Farm.
Right, okay.
And he can't go after them for 1 year. He can't induce them, or induce them to leave. But they're still were accumulated during the course of the marriage.
Does it have any bearing that Nancy contributed to starting the business through her retirement account or 401k or something of that nature?
Sure. It does as far as what the asset or talking about here, and while that marriage, while that State Farm contract in and of itself should be considered to be a marital asset. He's got contractual rights because he's the one who signed it, but we don't have a copy. But he's got contractual rights to those payments. We were asking, and I know that...
Excuse me, back to the earlier question. Is this a fair statement that a number of stakeholders have looked at this and the authorities are split?
Yes, I think Mr. Schmuel will come up here and tell you he's got two states, and we have two states. But I just showed what the rationale was, the underlying rationale for ours.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. The next case of the day is State v. Michael T. Jackson.